Hello, Poggers, and welcome to another episode of The Pog State, the first for summer of 2023 for the LCK. I'm still Atlas. I remain as that guy. This is Brendan Valdez. This is, of course, Chronicler. This is Wolf. And we're ready to break down some more sweet League of Legends. But first, we need to mention the fact that the full squad is finally here. Orcs made it over, and now Law has finally joined. Hooney's still here, and it's just the best. We finally got the whole gang. Isn't it amazing, guys? Team?
It's pretty good. Yeah, it's pretty
solid.
Yeah. Yeah.
No,
rounded out a team. We all have a little bit of time off. We all sleep a little bit better.
I didn't work today. I just came in and did the Pog
He's
State.
Fresh.
I just played Diablo all day long.
Oh, nice.
Amazing.
Living his best life.
Yeah. I'm so refreshed.
We have some patch notes to talk about as well. Unfortunately, they nerfed Twisting Blades. It no longer reduces. Oh, hang on. No. We've got patch notes for League of Legends to talk about because, of course, we're moving to 13-11 for next week. A couple of weeks. We can talk about how many nerfs Zeri is getting on this patch, can't we, guys? After what happened today. Of course, just to remind you guys, this Pog State episode is being filmed after our six-game day. We will be insane. And the last game was Genji versus T1 with Paze, or Zeri, completely obliterating T1 in the final team fight. And he also played extraordinarily well. I don't want to take anything away from him, but that champion is broken.
No, even as a Paze fan, I was like, this is not okay. But you know what's even better? Was in game 5, Gume Yusha also said, it's Zerying time, and he Zeried all over them as well. So we got it 2 times in a row. Woo!
Yeah. Not to mention the previous series where there was
also
getting like 15 kills.
That also happened. Yeah.
We had a really fun day, and I want to talk about the fact that we had 4 world champion teams, and I just want to like absorb how cool that is.
And all 4 of them got wins. They didn't actually win the series, of course, only 2 of them, but neither losing team got blown out.
DRX stepped up
really
to the
good
plate.
Day.
Yeah. That was good. That was cool.
And the League of Legends was like, it wasn't the level that we'd like, we're now telling all of the LPL fans, like, step aside, don't worry, we've leveled up. But man, it was some interesting games. Like, there was some back and forth. You didn't know who was going to win. It was very, very cool. It was a fun day. Definitely some things to work on, though. And we will go over that in our overreaction segment, where once again, we are going to be predicting exactly where everyone is going to stand at the end of the season. However, first, we need to have a look at our first week of play here. And namely, I want to start off with the players that have just joined us. Of course, Teddy coming back on Live Sandbox. Did he pass the eye test? Because I thought in the first series, the answer was a big resounding no. And then in the second one, I was like, ooh, Teddy still got some of it. What do you guys reckon?
I think he needs a little bit more time before I really make a big call, but I think first series was a bit weak. A second series was much better, and I think it kind of proved that he can still be the Fountain Laser 1v9 guy, so that was nice. It kind of like keeps his theme going, still running here into 2023, so I think that's good. I don't know if he's going to be able to carry his team against some of the better teams. I think individually he has kind of passed the eye test in my sense, but you know, he's still on Live Sandbox at this point, so I think they'll still struggle even with Teddy in the lineup. Like, it was a noticeable difference from Envy in that one game where he carried, but other than that, I think I still need time to declare whether or not he can like 15-2 like Def did or something like that to single-handedly carry against a better team.
Yeah, I'm feeling like the change will make them marginally better, but for me, Sandbox, what they were lacking is just consistency in general, and I think that in the first series against D+, Teddy was actually fine, but Kael had a horrible series, and Kael was like decent in the second one, but Willer, who was kind of invisible in the first one, which, you know, you're playing mid-jungle against Showmaker Canyon, that's to be forgiven, did look a lot better, so I think that it's an upgrade, but I don't expect them to really go beyond what they were last split. And I do think that some of the other teams are kind of gonna level up. But Teddy, individually, I'm happy he's back. I think that him on Sandbox is kind of funny because it's the cool kids, and then you have Grandpa Teddy.
Oh, yeah. Steve Buscemi Teddy.
That dynamic, I think, is just fun to watch.
I think Teddy grew on me a little bit throughout the week, but I'm kind of with you guys on that. I think he is not going to be the main problem on this roster. I think there are other synergy issues that need to be sorted out, which is somewhat understandable because you've changed the dynamic. Envy is out, right? Teddy's in. But it's a small change, and Envy wasn't really the strongest part of that roster. In my opinion, it was actually Willer through a majority of the season. So the fact that they seem a little bit lost here in this early part of the season makes me wonder how much time they were practicing and scrimming during the offseason, because they seem significantly weaker than what we saw from them in spring out of the gates. And we're seeing other teams, for example, like Kwangdong, who looks significantly better, right? And I think Kwangdong spent a lot of time in the offseason. Live Sandbox, I'm not sure. Bring a new AD carry in, last possible second. You know, sometimes there are going to be some growing pains, but I think Teddy, unfortunately, even if he gets back to his peak form, alone won't be able to get the job done. You need a team to play around, and I'm not confident that's there right now, at least after week one.
I kind of agree. I think that Liv Sandbox have a lot of potential, but I don't think that they are the Liv Sandbox from spring, the team that's going to surprise us and be far further up the standings than we were expecting. I don't think that's them. I think that's a different team this time around. But yeah, there's been a few other new additions as well. It's not just Teddy, because Quads made his way back, formerly known as Solka. It's not necessarily one of these stories that we're telling really happy things about. He has been playing his Cassiopeia that he rode to rank one here in Korea, but it was otherwise not the greatest of experiences.
There's one thing we can say, and that he is better than Fiesta, and that is maybe that's what Nongshim needed. I really have to say on the matter.
Kronk likes to say nice things. I think he's leaning on the Cassiopeia pick, even when it doesn't make sense. I think that even though individually he seems to be stronger than Fiesta, I will 100% agree with that. That's why I gave the thumbs up a second ago. I think that his champion pool seems to be quite small, and his teamwork right now needs a lot of help. Like, he looks like a solo queue Cassiopeia one trick that got pushed into a pro team. And
I mean, well, yeah.
And unfortunately, that usually doesn't lead to success. So I'm pretty down on him at the moment. I want to see some growth out of him throughout the season, but
hey, don't worry, because he's not the worst. It's fine. That one belongs with somebody else at this point.
I think he is looking potentially better than Karras, yes. Karras is having a bit of a rough one. We'll talk about that a little bit later on.
Yeah, I think being a Cassiopeia one trick at the moment is much better than being an Azir one trick. He's
getting buffed next page.
Hey, there you go. Maybe maybe they've been scrimming on the wrong patch. Not entirely sure. But I want to finish on a little bit of an upbeat, and this would have been a downbeat if we hadn't have had the next two games in the series between D Plus Kia and DRX, and that is their new imports from their academy roster.
Academy.
Kung Yehun. Yehu. Kung Yehu is his name. That's just his full name. Yahoo! We call him Yehu here. We keep the K as silent, and it bothers me a lot because I read things. And same. I read names, and if a player does a thing, their name is there, and I'm reading what they're doing, and then I screw up the play-by-play. And Valdez is exactly the same, and we're bothered by it. But his name is Yehu, so it makes sense to call him Yehu. My rant is now over, and we're going to move on. But Paddock also having a really, really good time. Man, this guy, impressive. Yes, he was playing Zeri today, but I like these new players coming in.
So Paddock is something that, obviously, as we know, been following Challengers for a while. You guys are also now all invested, which is great. But I've never watched Academy, because that is like, it's really
there's only
hard
so
to,
far into the weeds
there's only
we can
so,
go.
so far down we can go.
I studied Academy before I became an LCK caster, because it was the only thing that was happening that I could watch. And I feel like I might have actually warped my perception of League of Legends. It was probably not a good thing.
So he came in and was like, why are they not picking Master Yi here? It's insane.
So if you're familiar, Academy rather is like bi-weekly tournaments, and it's constantly rotating rosters, and like the players do like 50 name changes. It's really hard to keep track of, but I do know that Kevin Kim of Horizon does actually follow it. He was really excited about Paddock, and I was a bit like, oh, but Plata is actually great in the context of Challengers. He was decent in the LCK games we saw him in. But you know, I think Yeo had a pretty decent showing. I think his aggression is nice to see, particularly because Fade didn't really show that last split. But Paddock is legitimately looks awesome, which yeah. I think is really, really cool for a first week here.
It's yeah. crazy. We actually, I heard a little bit of inside intel that the whole reason for the switch was that DRX just did like an internal like tournament just to see who was going to be the best. They cycled through each of the players and just chose the best performing players for their main roster. And it just so happens to be Yahoo and Paddock that got through.
Yeah, I feel like there's something that happens in professional esports where it's like, you know, fans will get really angry when like their favorite player just kind of gets dumped. But I feel like DRX were kind of in a spot where some hard decisions had to be made, you know? And I think with that, it seems a little bit somewhat hastily thrown together, you know, like just one internal tournament. This guy was the best on this day. We're going to pick him up. Like, I'm sure they did a bit more than that, but they look like the best players individually to come up compared to what we saw out of Fates. Now, I don't know what's going on with Duck Dom. That's kind of a different story.
Charles Dickens story, perhaps?
a Dickensian story.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Paddock looked great. I think Yahoo is serviceable. I think he looks a little bit nervous, but I don't know. Like, Paddock, on the first day, he was a little bit invisible, but at least on the second day, he came out. Whereas Yahoo came out great in the first day, a little bit more invisible on the second day. But in general, I feel like they had to make some hard decisions, and they did. So I'm kind of for it for DRX, given their spring, which was really yeah. bad. It was just really bad. So,
I mean, yeah. it was a tale of two ducks, yeah. so to speak. We had Duck Dom, and then we had Paddock. And Paddock has come in to me as a player that I had low expectations for. And then tonight, they were really heavily broken because he played incredibly well. His positioning in particular was what was most notable for me. He's playing against Canyon's Wukong and just not getting caught like ever. Always avoiding the Cyclone engages. Very good positioning. Knows exactly how far to stay back and then to go in a Zeri. I mean, yes, Zeri things, but still. And we've seen greater players than him get caught by these types of engages. And it's both that he's the best thing about him, I think, is a lot of these younger players are playing with something to prove a lot of the time. I have to prove that I'm good, or I might get pulled back, especially, you know, when you're competing with Duck Dom and Pleta, got MVP of Challenger Spring. You put a player in this position, and, like, they often try to overachieve, like we see in Challengers oftentimes, when you're in Challengers, like, I'm trying to prove that I need to go up to the top roster, but I think he's just trying to win. He's, like, just playing clean, standard League of Legends, and that's what's the most impressive thing. He's super young, super clean play already, not nervous, not overconfident. It's like he was always there. It's like he just belongs to this team, and he feels like the identity of the team now is somewhat focused on him, and that's exciting.
And he gets to play with world champion Beryl, so yeah, you know that he's getting yeah. boosted up and actually being put in a really good spot. Right?
I do. I think right, that...
Another one. Yeah,
yeah. I wanted to, because we might not see Duck Dom. Obviously, he was dealing with some health issues as well, but to me, Duck Dom was never necessarily the problem with the Duck Dom Beryl combo. Beryl looked much more egregious when it came to the 1v1.
Oh, yeah.
But regardless of who you feel like was to blame, they clearly didn't work well together. So in that light, I really like the Paddock change. I do think that in the first series, he did have like, that was him, right? Like the Aphelios Flash.
Yeah, the Flash yeah. Gale Force problem. That was the one.
He pulled a Henna.
It happens.
Yeah. Or a Vital the other day. That was cool.
Oh,
too.
Yeah. Vital did that like three
times.
The
1v5.
Fun times. But I am just happy to see that a team with Beryl and Croco has two extra psychopaths that are ready to just go, like, yeah. go in. And it might not work, right? But I do think that the team looks like they are at least on the same page.
And Rascal looks just incredible.
He's just insane. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, God. It's the fact that it's like Rascal and four psychopaths. That's the team. And I
love that.
It's almost working. We're talking about a team in like a really positive light that's now 0-2. Like, they're not doing great. They are currently last. But it's a good last. It's not a really bad last.
They had tougher opponents than some of the other.
Yes. I would say that. Anyway, that's a bit sad. So let's talk about something a little bit more happy, shall we? And that is the fact that in the first week, we've actually seen a lot of diversity as far as picks in the jungle are concerned. It's, we've seen the Volibear come back. We've seen the flex of the Scion jungle, which happened today from Canyon, which I think was out of necessity, but it was a beautiful, beautifully executed necessity that obviously had a plan behind it, executed very well, very, very cool. Saw the Nautilus, the Kanabi special, come in today as well by Croco, and he actually looked fantastic. His snipe hook that came out onto Deft in game two. Oh, baby.
Sorry, I'm like just trying to open the water. What's happening? It was really hard.
That's really hard.
You like that? You like that guy trying to sneak in, but like it's a creaky door, and so instead it's like as loud as possible by going.
I'm trying to open up potato chips in the movie theater.
Yeah,
you know,
No,
sorry, everyone.
Yeah, well,
you're fine.
Completely ruined my entire intro of explaining all of the jungle picks that happened, but that's definitely been a cool thing of the meta. Does that survive the patch change as we move towards 13.11, gentlemen?
I think so.
Yeah. We also had the...
For the next couple of weeks, at least.
I think so as well. We had the same thing again today, after in the T1 series as well, where they picked Jax and then flexed the jungle and got the Malphite. Didn't win the game, but the Malphite did work out extremely well. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see more of this.
I think Zeus worked out pretty well.
Yeah, Zeus, in the 1v1. Zeus has been looking great. Yeah.
He's great in the regular season.
Always is.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he was fine at MSI as well. But that's like a whole nother...
No. What's MSI?
It's fine.
We don't talk about that. We don't talk about that here.
Exist.
Ian, but, cut this part of the video. Okay, continue.
Jungle pick diversity to me is in a decent place. I think it was Wolf who said it earlier, because there's like Vi and Maokai basically are always banned, because those two are very far ahead of the curve. But then after that, we still have Wukong for like, how long have we had Wukong and Viego for like a year and a half?
Yeah, Viego took like a timeout.
Viego took a little timeout
and then he came back.
But like he was, since his release in like 2021, he was meta for the entire year, and then he had like one split off, I think. He just, you know, take it easy. He doesn't want to get burned out.
You guys remember Sylas? Do you guys remember Xin Zhao and Lee Sin?
I mean,
I'm glad that they're out for a while.
We saw Lee. Yeah.
That happened.
Unfortunately.
I think the pick diversity is always going to be a topic. I don't think it will be, outside of AD carry specifically, it will be as bad in the regular split, because I think especially a lot of our better teams are happy to experiment with stuff against weaker teams. But when it comes to, you know, the playoffs meta and the international stage, I think it'll be basically the same.
I think it's in a pretty good spot. Like, I feel like I remember a meta past where, like, Elise was permabanned on red side. But then you'd always get, like, Lee Sin, Wukong every single time anyway. So I feel like now, even though we have, like, these two junglers that are way ahead that sometimes squeak by because a lot of things are OP right now, we're still also getting a lot of different crazy picks that are coming out. And I wonder what the real reason for it is. Like, what is the driving force behind it, you know?
Behind what? Sorry, I missed.
For all of this diversity. Like, is it just a need for flex picks with, like, the Scion and the Jax and stuff like that? Or is it, like, they just feel like it's pretty wide open right now?
I think it's how broken bot lane is. So, like, you basically end up very often, you have to prioritize bot lane no matter what. So you get to the second tier. Like, junglers very often, because of Annie and Ahri and Nico and whatnot. You pick, like, bot lane and mid, or sometimes
so it's about draft
and then
positioning.
Exactly. Like, then you get to the second half.
I think part of the reason why we have the junglers that we do, also Maokai and Vi, which also fit what I'm going to say, but they're, like, almost always gone and have incredibly high win rates when they are played because they're so busted, is right now it's a meta where you just need setup CC. You either got to kill the enemy AD carry, or you got to get your AD carry ahead in the bottom side. And then you have the two main mid laners, Annie and Ahri, both go very well with any sort of setup CC that's really easy to do pre-6. Wukong is kind of the exception to this. Is like the one jungler right now that doesn't have setup CC. But you look at Jax and the Scion even, and like, well, fits the bill. You know, and they're top laners, but you can put them in the jungle, and what do? They do CC, and they can get you ahead, and they can put your bottom laner in an advantageous position. And so it's just really easy to say, well, these picks are viable, they're strong. Maokai is like, I have the best setup CC, because he has multiple ways to CC people. His ultimate can CC half of the map. So Vi can point and click and click on somebody, and then that's the end of that.
So I can lock down Zeri.
I think that's actually... So can Nautilus from the jungle, too.
Yeah. Also another viable pick. And we're not seeing picks like Lee Sin find the same sort of success because they don't really... Their CC is so conditional. It's so difficult to pull it off.
They require more finesse.
Yeah.
It's not like I point and click and win.
Also, Lee Sin doesn't have the longevity. Yeah. As he just becomes a kick in the late game. And, I think that there's that. There's also the argument of, jungle matchups seem to be important as well. So we have a lot of pivoting towards making sure that, 1v1s from the jungle are kind of, okay, which is, why Viego makes his way back in again, because he can, win some of these skirmishes. And fighting over camp seems, far more important. We saw, the masterclass that Canyon's been able to demonstrate with just eliminating the enemy jungler out of experience.
KT and Cuz as well.
Yeah, Cuz has been very good at it. I think T1 did a bit of it today as well, given Peanut's Wukong experience in their game number two, which was not exactly the most fun for him. Doran, of course, having the worst time of it.
I think
there's a lot of different ways that you can approach the jungle, which is kind of cool.
The role that I'm most... And this is going to sound strange because we do have Zarya, Felios, and Yumi, and all that stuff. The role I'm kind of most disappointed in terms of watching and casting drafts so far has been mid.
Yeah.
It's Annie versus Ahri. It feels like 90% of the games. Some people have tried to do some other stuff. It's really fallen flat on its face oftentimes. And we're not seeing anybody really try to push the envelope.
Yeah.
We saw Aurelion Sol one time, but it was okay, well, they're probably going to win no matter what they played. We saw Cassiopeia, which is a one-trick thing. We saw Syndra. It's okay. Yeah. And Syndra is one of those niche picks, but otherwise it's kind of
Yeah, we didn't see Azir.
A lot of the classic long-range control mages are just out of the meta. Namely, Azir and Viktor are gone. Syndra's okay. And she has a good matchup in Annie, but she just does not do what Annie does, right? And at the same time...
It's okay. Cassante's there.
I was about to say, I can't believe you guys are forgetting about the best mid laner.
Yeah. Cassante, yeah.
Disgusting.
Or Gragas. He's good, too.
A good one. Yeah.
It's all these big setup picks,
Yeah, yeah. It's the same from the jungle. I also think that, and this is something that is the biggest problem for jungle, there are basically two itemization builds that are okay for jungle right now. You either go Sunder or Cleaver, and then that's it, right? And that's the reason why I think Viego and whatnot are good. Or you go something Radiant Virtue or Even Shroud. I think Even Shroud and Sunfire builds are also viable. Mm-hmm. Even Shroud is insanely cheap after the item rework, which is also why I think Nautilus, for example, works really well.
Even you basically throw Sejuani in there.
Yeah, as well.
Seen that a little bit.
And Gore Drinker is just really bad. No Gore Drinker champ is building it, which is also another reason why I think champions like Lee are just the spike just doesn't mean anything, so you don't get to even Jarvan. Win skirmishes. Yeah, another example. Yeah. The mid diversity is probably the worst, even though bot feels way worse because of how extremely busted the role is at the moment.
There's a lot of different ways you can take the bot lane, though. Do you want to play scaling? Do you want to play tempo? Or do you want to play all in?
Do you want to win? And then you pick Zeri.
Yeah. Well, if it's available.
What if it's banned?
It just doesn't.
Then you take Emilio. That's the right choice.
Or Yumi.
You can play anything with Emilio.
Top is also kind of... Scion.
It's been okay.
Ornn.
Top's been less
it's less bad than
it's not Mundo Shyvana, okay? Yeah. Mundo Shyvana will always be the worst, and now that it's not that, I think we're okay.
It hasn't been that for a while, as it turns out.
Yeah, it's been maybe 8 years. But 9 years.
Remember Renekt and Aatrox? That was a thing.
But I'm sure
when was 2014? That was 9 years ago.
But I'm sure these notes that I've got here in front of me about the patch.
Let's move.
I'm sure there's some secrets of the future right in here, right?
Yeah, speaking of the secrets of the future, let's have a talk about 1311. So what is going to change? What are the things that are important? We're going to dub this the KT patch, right?
Do we want to start with the positive or the negative first? Because
I don't
do
think
the
there are any negatives. There's just absent.
There are no changes on this patch to Zeri, Nico, Cassante,
Milio.
So
it's Annie? Not really a patch.
No changes to Annie?
Yeah, but like that's how bad it's gotten. Annie doesn't even feel that bad to me at the moment.
No,
she's just so always there.
But
she's
like, guys, but like the biggest issue has been that ban slot being taken up by a Mumu every single game. So the fact that we got that nerf in, I think, is actually huge.
You get an extra ban against Kwangdong now.
I also think with Jinx is super low prio in this league, I think we better nerf that. And Aphelios win rate plummeting to sub 40%. Better get rid of that too. Better hurt that one. And after I saw Showmaker play Aurelion Soul, I was like, I'm glad that's getting nerfed.
Yeah, that was I DM'd Freak immediately after that game. I'm like, did you see him spinning around like a sprinkler hose?
It was great. I'm going to be a little bit hopeful. Okay, I'm going to bring up the free champions that I hope maybe we'll see. And it'll be cool. And then after that, you guys can both tear that down. And we can collectively complain about the lack of changes to the champions that are super busted. No. Rek'Sai, I expect to see. And it's just a new phase in the jungle. Her win rate is absurdly high at the moment. The solo queue is like 50, or it's nerfed now, but 55, 56%. They just gave her a lot of extra power. Kid feels a lot smoother. Made her more of a bruiser, so you can go like Stridebreaker. You can even go Triforce if you want to, but I'd imagine it mostly be like the Stridebreaker bruiser build. And I think Rek'Sai is a champion that incentivizes like early aggressive play, has cool flashy moments. We haven't seen her in a while. That's cool. Ivern, a lot of players and teams are already scrimming this. Extremely, extremely strong. I'm not really excited about him because I feel like he will make the AD carry meta worse, but it's a new champion, so we'll take it. And then Rell in the jungle, because they
bop the dragon for a billion.
They reworked her, and then they were like, oh god, her win rate is like 42%, and then they hotfixed her, and then on this patch specifically, she's really busted. Now, we have seen in the past that often pro teams will just ignore it if it's like one patch wonders, but maybe we get to see some new jungle champions, and I think that's dope.
I think we will not see any new jungle champions, but that's okay because we already have a lot.
We'll see Rek'Sai, 100%.
Okay, I'll give you Rek'Sai.
I will definitely see Ivern.
I don't think Ivern is going to make it in.
He's too good with AD carry.
I think he's too squishy, though.
He has a shield.
And also, wasn't Peanut a bit of an Ivern adopter back in the day? I think he...
No idea. I know Raptor and Umpty are spamming the ever-living hell out of it.
Yeah, that would make sense.
I am concerned because Fiddlesticks, for example, when Kronkler was very much on the, we're 100% going to see Karthus and Fiddlesticks all the time.
Fiddlesticks,
and it happened like exactly less than one time, aka zero times.
Ivern has a lot of CC. He has great supportive capabilities. He's very strong.
What happens when you don't have top prio and then the Viego comes and finds you and the top laner comes too, and then Ivern dies and then dies again? Just protect him for it.
Just go into the brush.
LCK doesn't do squishy junglers, except Umpty sometimes. I could see Umpty playing it because he does stuff like that. He plays Lilia, and sometimes it works. But I think it's, unless things change more drastically in the meta and some other stuff changes that we're not really foreseeing right now, I don't think he'll make it. Although I do agree that if you can make it work, he does make AD carries even more busted. The shield is insane. If you get the second shield as well, it's actually crazy.
Would we be able to ever see a Daisy versus Tibbers 1v1?
I hope so.
Probably.
That's what I need.
Honestly, it probably will happen if he gets played.
I don't think Daisy has a good time in that.
What do you mean? She knocks him back.
Yeah, but yeah. And he burns everyone to death. I don't think Daisy...
I mean, Daisy did
get
buffed on that match.
That's true.
Daisy was like... Her like third hit was like doing a heap of damage when... Ivan was good last time, which I feel like was a million years ago.
So I think Renekton's changes are pretty minor in the grand scheme of things, but I do think that Renekton is, if we can find more AP junglers of any type, including, like for example, bringing a squishy Ivern back, maybe then Renekton becomes more meta and we see him, you know, played mid, because he is great lockdown for Zeri as well. We've seen a lot of games in the past where great Renekton players like Kana, for example, did this very successfully a lot. You lock down the Zeri, and then you blow her up. His kind of point-and-click CC is very good in this meta, but he's not that tanky, and sometimes games get beyond his ability to do that, and he's just, unfortunately, then a paperweight. But I think we will see Renekton a few times on this patch, for sure.
Yeah, it's just the items, like Prowler's Claw not having a dash anymore, so he has to go Gore, which, as mentioned, isn't great. I do think we should also shout out, by the way, that a lot of the AD carry items are getting nerfed. It's not. I don't think it'll substantially change it, but maybe it'll be a little bit less egregious.
Like Static Shiv, or sorry, not Static Shiv.
No, Storm Razor.
Don't talk about that item, Wolf.
Yeah. The item that
That is illegal.
That aiming bot by mistake or something like that. A Stormraiser is what I meant, which is what aiming probably should have bought in that case as well. That's what he was trying to buy,
yeah. I think. Yeah.
That item, I think, hurts Aphelios. That change to that item hurts Aphelios more than anything else. Aphelios is also getting nerfed on this patch, so that's a little bit concerning about AD carry diversity. But maybe we'll see less Aphelios bans for no reason, which we did see a lot this week.
Yeah, we saw, especially in today's final series, T1 versus Genji, the Genji Aphelios bans. Yes, Gumushi fantastic at the champion, but there are other things, I think, that could have been a little bit more game-breaking. But we don't necessarily know what is going on in scrims. I like the Kalista buffs. I like the idea of Lethality Kalista being a thing. I've been talking to Kison about it, and he thinks that it's, like, legit. Being able to, like, pierce and rend and, like, go full reset mode and, like, build a Dusk Blade and be invincible, get resets. That sounds dope to me.
You play it mid, right? Not bot.
You can play it wherever you want. Yeah. Doesn't matter. Yeah, no. Just lock it in. I'm in Korea, so I can't communicate what lane I want. I just lock my champion and then I'm put somewhere. It's generally how it goes. And Kalista can be a support as well, so we're safe.
Usually it has an icon next to you, lets you know what role you're supposed to play.
That's if you're playing that game mode.
That's a suggestion. I think Kalista, the way that she's changed, like it's mostly like, I don't know, it feels like in some ways a nerf, feels like a buff in some other ways, but I think that with how we're seeing, like, for example, Draven really fall off if you don't get massively ahead, I think Kalista falls off in a similar way in this meta because you have to break through beefy front lines and hard engage. And can't Fates Call yourself, so if you're kind of out there trying to do damage, you're going to have a bad time. So I'm not sold on Kalista being relevant in pro. Maybe some elo points you could pick up in your ladder games, but I think this patch, unfortunately, is not going to change a whole lot about what we see in the LCK.
Zek is a Kali. 10 damage to Q. 10 damage. That's huge. A whole 10 damage.
It's on the list.
Yeah.
Did they give her CC, though?
So,
uh-oh, she doesn't have any.
She can't wait CC.
Death.
The actual
murdering CC.
Actual winner of the patch, though, is definitely KT.
Oh, 100%,
yeah. Because it's TF. You know, you can play AD TF or AP TF and then Rek'Sai.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess Keen plays a mean Crocodile as well.
Yeah, he's a bit of a Renekton savant. Wait, didn't he already play it?
Yeah, he did.
He did, yeah.
And aiming with Aphelios is kind of bad too, so like, Aphelios nerfs don't hurt them? Like,
yeah, he's not much of a Jinx guy. She's also been nerfed for some
Hold
reason.
Hold up.
Yeah.
KT?
Hey. Well, I mean, I think we were already getting a bit keen on KT. No pun intended. So yeah, like the patch, like yes, a few of the item nerfs, we'll have to see how they're going to work out. But otherwise, I think we're basically just staying on the same one, is kind of the vibe that we're sort of getting. But we'll just see. We'll see whether we do actually get some adjustments, whether it's going to be enough to push things around. Or, like, the main thing is that getting these couple of days off in between the first week and the second, teams get to go back and be like, well, Zeri's annoying, and so maybe we'll, like, she'll be hit into permaban status for next week, and then we survive through it a little bit better. With the jungle pool being opened up as well, maybe the Maokai and Vi are not going to be the only things that are super ridiculous. Maybe Rek'Sai gets up there as well, and then perhaps we've just got a gentleman's agreement, and so those things leave the ban list,
yeah.
And something else happens.
One thing I want to talk about before we move on really quickly is, like, Milio's not changed in this patch at all, but I think Milio has kind of been mostly only strong in lane. And outside of lane, has done some cool stuff, and some of his really makes Aphelios strong.
I think we haven't seen what makes Milio broken. Because today, like, there were a lot of times where, like, Peanut would just never die.
No, I think we have. I think he's just really, he's not flashy.
He's subtle, yeah.
But
I'm not saying he's weak outside of lane, but I think he's not super broken. And I think that a lot of the time he's banned and then Zeri gets through and then Zeri does crazy things. And there's also no Milio then to, like, try to crush Zeri in lane, which often does happen when there's a Milio lane into the Zeri. So I think that my one hope for draft adaptation as we move into week two is that we'll see more bans on Zeri and more counterplay, more setups for Milio, like try to figure out how to deal with this champion a little bit better. Because I think Zeri, by the end of the week when we saw our best teams play, I think Zeri clearly much stronger, clearly more relevant this week thus far. So I hope that that's an adaptation we see, because I really, with no Zeri nerfs on this patch, I really just don't want to see games defined by it. I voted a few times against Zarya this week in protest, practically, it felt like, but...
So did Chronicler.
It was not a protest vote. I don't want
to get into it again. I had my Chovy vote today at the end. I was the only one. You had your vote as well.
I had your back on the Chovy vote. That was legit. He had really good team fights.
No, that was definitely excellent. Okay, so the patch. We don't have a whole lot of hope. I've got a fair bit of copium on getting a few extra bans, things like that. And sometimes it's all about holding on to that sort of hope, that shred of possibility that Zeri won't be in your professional game of League of Legends. You know? Because it really, like, I was sad, and I tweeted about this earlier on. I was sad that it takes away from the team's achievement in a lot of people's minds. And I, like we see our first pentakill for the season. Paze picks that up.
First one
and
in the LCK.
He, like, if you look at where he was clicking and what he was doing, the decisions he was making, he played an amazing game of League of Legends. But do you know what everyone's looking at? He played Zeri.
Nobody's looking at the really nice team fight setups as well for the
jungler and the mid laner.
Like, I thought it was a good game from Genji overall.
I mean, outside of Doran just straight up running,
but then like also kind of salvaging it despite it. Like,
yeah, I don't think
does it make the early game good. It just means that like, wow, like how did he actually do things this game?
True.
Doran is
he bought a Zhonya, so I was happy with that.
The more I see of Doran, the less I understand him. I've just given up on trying.
Yeah.
It's like Nick Cage. It can't be done.
Yeah, it's true. Sometimes you just have to accept that this is actually what
this
peak
just
performance looks like.
No.
Top diff.
Don't push it, Atlas.
Oh, dear. All right, so now it's time to jump in to our crystal balls. Last time around, it was a whole lot of shenanigans. We had a bunch of different calls, and Wolf took some gambles. They didn't necessarily pay off. But Wolf, very similarly to KT, generally does better in summer. He gets better with age, with heat. You need to warm him up to make this stuff happen. And so let's have a look at who we think is going to be positioned the best.
Are we
gonna in
the
summer
the
split?
No, let's go top to bottom, I think.
Top to bottom?
Yeah.
I feel like bottom to top, especially because...
Bottom to top is easier.
It's a lot easier because we have a lot more similarities.
As in like the bottom three?
I just don't want to talk about bro right
now. No, but we don't have to. We can
we're not
already kind of did.
So
bro's on the bottom.
Okay, man, bro.
For everyone...
10th place. Yeah.
Bro's 10th.
You mean okay savings brink, Breon.
Okay, man, bro.
yeah.
Bro 10th,
okay,
Nongshim 9th.
And they're 10th because they lost two devastating series against teams that are also weak.
Yes.
And also the
so
way
Nongshim
they played
next.
Gave us no faith
Zero
at all.
Yeah. So Nongshim were next, and although they looked good against Bro, it was against Bro. So they're 9th.
Yeah.
Same roster. I mean, they have Quad, but...
Effectively the same team.
Yeah, we're all kind of on the same page with that.
Things start to change a little bit, though, when we move up to the next spot.
Yeah, 8th is kind of all over the place.
We have three different teams in 8th.
Yeah, which is pretty nutty.
So I'll talk about my DRX placement first. I actually think DRX might be the sandbox of Lost Split. I think that might end up way higher. But I am counting on my, in case it doesn't happen, right? I'm counting on the week 4 or 5 mulligan that we get. We can swap two teams. that might be DRX for me. I think DRX is like I can simultaneously, maybe they'll end up swapping with Kwangdong, right? Who I, spoiler alert, have making playoffs. I think that DRX is a team to me that in the D plusers looked really good. I've heard some good things, but actually delivering on it after how weak their spring was, I can't really reasonably place them higher. But I think that 8th is where I expect them to go, but if there is a team that like shoots up the way that Sandbox did last time, I think it might be DRX.
It's not DRX. there is a team that it is going to be, but it's not DRX. I like where your head's at, you know? So, like, you're searching for it, you're just getting the wrong team.
I went Live Sandbox here, which I think is one of my two big controversial takes I'll have in this list, and I think Live Sandbox really disappointed me this week, and I'm basing this off of, my list is based off week one results only. So like almost everything that you'll see in this list is kind of like based on what I see and the potential I see because...
So T1's next?
No.
Because like they're even on standings.
But I'm talking about performances, potential, right? Live Sandbox. I want to get serious about Live Sandbox, all right? So Live Sandbox, wasn't impressed. Coordination all over the place, and it feels like another repeat of like, oh, will Live Sandbox grow over the course of the season? I'm like, we already had that growth period. So for me, if you're going to spend that time growing, well, for example, Kwangdong Freaks has already grown massively during the offseason. They look way better. DRX is showing a lot of strong potential right now. I think we have not even seen like half of DRX's potential. I have to put Kwangdong and DRX ahead of Live Sandbox right now, like 100% in my mind, because Live Sandbox can't start from zero again and then become a playoff team. I just don't see it.
I had Kwangdong at eighth because wins against Bro and Nongshim don't count.
Fair point.
But does that mean that we know more stuff, or does that mean that we just don't know anything?
They look like the same team. They were all over the place. They got wins, but it was like they kind of stumbled across the finish line. One of the games was due to playing Cassante against five people that were flailing their arms around.
True.
I have no faith in this team, actually. I'm being really mean, but honest, because I don't see what you guys see yet. I think it's kind of just week one, very weak strength of schedule buff. And I think that DRX and Live Sandbox has shown me a lot better. I think that both of the roster changes that those two teams have had compared to Kwangdong are going to benefit them a lot more. I actually was more impressed by Live Sandbox. I thought that Bertel actually was performing really well.
He was.
They also have Clear, right? Don't they?
Yeah. That was starting Round Robin 2.
Round Robin 2.
So
that's
really? Good. Yeah. Because he got signed so late that he's not eligible to play in Challengers until Round Robin 2.
I think they're just going to get like wins with Teddy, especially with how important AD carry is. And DRX, I mean, I thought they looked great this time against DK, so I was like, I think they deserve it in my mind more than Kwangdong, even though they are 0-2. So I'm kind of like looking at the big picture, like the wider view, and I think that's where they'll end up.
So didn't Kwangdong beat DRX, not Nongshim?
Oh, was it?
If I remember correctly, yeah. I think it was Kwangdong versus DRX in the...
Now you're making me second guess myself as well.
I didn't cast that series.
Oh, did I? Like,
who am I?
I think I did.
I think I was.
I don't remember
it.
Though.
our brains are already.
Right. Pause the show.
Let's pull it up.
Look it up. I'll pull it up. Otherwise, everyone's like, "Yeah, the casters don't even know what they cast. Who
to
are these people?"
To be perfectly honest, like that person quoting, on the money, because right now I don't know very much.
I have no idea what I'm.
Yeah, I think it's chocolate
right,
pudding
so
in my brain.
Kwangdong 2-0 DRX and 2-0 Bro.
Yeah. Okay. Doesn't really change your...
Doesn't
like,
change too much.
I mean, unless you've got DRX above them.
I mean, that's the fun part.
It's still
of,
early.
Yeah.
I think DRX will outscale them.
They also looked way better between the two series. And given it's Yehu and Paddock, I think that makes sense. It's week one
predictions.
You
still had DRX
right?
Eight.
This is fun. Yeah, but I'm counting on the mulligan.
He's ready for the turnaround.
Okay. So for me, in defense of Kwangdong, I think the one problem I had with Kwangdong in... spring, for most of spring, like towards the end they kind of turned it around a little bit, but it was too late, right? But like they took that upset win over Gen G, for example. But Kwangdong's macro was really abysmal, and it feels like every season Kwangdong just guts the roster, new roster, terrible macro, terrible vision game, right? Every time. This time spring season was like that, but at the beginning of summer so far the macro game from their leads was really good. They actually pushed their advantages super hard, and I look at that, I we know Bulldog's laning is pretty good, right? That's kind of like all he did in spring. We're like, wow, his laning is good. Then he turns his brain off and things get a little bit weird, but he looked really good so far in terms of what he was doing macro-wise in the first week against, again, only two opponents, but I know I overrated Kwangdong last time as well, but that was kind of a meme. This time I'm feeling like this team is definitely going places. I think they have the right direction. They're moving in a way that means that their like game sense and their progression of how they play around the Rift is much better than I have expectations for Live Sandbox. Live Sandbox, on the other hand, like again, going back to that, like these two kind of swapped for me for Valdez. Live Sandbox, like they're clueless about where they're going on the Rift and like what objectives they need to take and how they want to set up. So that's one of my reasons why I've got them above, like Chronicler does as well.
Yeah, I have Sandbox in seventh, barely not making playoffs, and then Kwangdong above them.
Yeah.
But it's time for you, Atlas.
Yeah, so I just want to like clarify that I think that the top eight, I think the bottom two are like at the bottom of the cliff in a pile.
Yeah, there's a tier break here.
Yeah, and then there's like the top of the cliff, and that's where the eight teams are like hanging out, you know? And I think that there is a very clear gap between our bottom two and the rest. I've got DRX sitting at eighth, same as Chronicler. I don't have the same faith that they're going to be like the dark horse that I can swap at the fifth game. I just predicted who I thought was going to be
at the end, you know, just making the prediction straight up, not going to trade anything, just not going to. And then Live Sandbox I put in seventh place, and I just defended them, but I like have them only one spot higher, which is why I wanted to clarify that I think if you're above the bottom two, then there is a lot more leeway and a lot more that we can discuss. Mine gets fun when I have Homolive Esports in sixth.
That's what I was waiting for.
Talk about
and Kwandong Freaks are my fifth place team. I reckon this team is actually legitimately good. I think you guys are all just trolling. I think Duda's the best top laner in the league, the only one that's able to actually take
very
control. Yeah, you have him in sixth. Yeah, but I have them above a super team. Above a super team, Chronicler.
You shut up,
I mean, let me ask you, I mean, to defend Max a little bit, like, of these two top laners, which one do you think has played better so far? Kingen or Dudu?
Which junglers have played better? Youngjae or Clid?
Think about who Dudu has played against.
Damn, I want to change that.
Dudu did play against Rascal, but Rascal wasn't... Yeah.
Rascal wasn't playing as well because he was against Dudu. That's why... I don't know what you guys are talking about. Like, you guys have seen what these players have been capable of. Bulldog, you're on the Bulldog hype train. Where are you now?
They're making playoffs.
This team is solo carried by Dudu.
That's true.
Nobody's going to...
Yo,
nobody's
don't do my boy Bulldog like that,
nobody's going to change my mind.
Bulldog can't be sad, even in the intro video where he's supposed to be serious.
He's just like...
He's just a happy-go-lucky boy, just bringing up the spirits of his
team.
Honestly,
my only concern with this team is the bottom lane, which
is
very relevant in the meta, so I'm like...
Scrimbox is saying that Taeyun and June are like really good at the moment. Their performances have been like crazy, and they are psychopaths. And they've actually been performing well.
I mean, DRX believed in them once, and it didn't go very well for them. Rest of the team, I'm feeling good about.
I used to think June was good until I saw him this week.
Go on.
I don't need to say anything else. Were you guys not watching the same?
I think the Rakan recall was really rough, but I do.
That's only one part of it.
Yeah, I mean, there's more. That one.
Fellas actually has a list of 13
points. Yeah, I listed.
What about the Zeri recall today
against Valdez? Yeah,
the Pays recall. That was the game they won, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It wasn't recall. It was. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, he recalled while he watched Carrier clear a control ward and then saw Carrier zoom towards his location and was like, I'll be fine.
He won't blind hook it.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't blind. He was on a ward.
I respect it. I think that Taeyun and June, for me, also are kind of the issue. And I don't think that the Moham solves the situation. But as we see... You can have as long as your bot lane is serviceable, which I do have faith that
you can win 2020 worlds.
Well, also not only that, but also KT's bot lane is not necessarily their. I really like Lahenz, but like it's not about the bot lane, right? Like Lahenz is more about what he does for the rest of the team. KT is a team that to me works because of how good their top side is and how they work together and how they impact the map, even in a bot side focused meta. And I think Kwangnong are just the worst version of that, but I think they can make playoffs off of that.
I think that they, like, but the bottom lane is psycho on Kwandong.
They are.
They have a psycho bottom lane instead of having a, like, neutral bottom lane.
Leave aiming behind and go.
Yeah, but my issue is that it's good to have a psycho bot lane if they play, like, tempo picks like Draven and Kalista and stuff like that, but they just play, like, Felios and Zeri and then they're psycho and then fall behind. And, like, it's not...
What if those picks get nerfed into the ground and then we're just in a meta where it is just psychopaths?
I just think the personality trait and playstyle doesn't line up with the scaling.
So, maybe onto Hanwha, where I feel like we have very aligned opinions.
Yeah,
I'm going. We haven't talked about
close
it at
enough.
All, but I'm going to blindly assume that bot lane, or rather, AD carry.
That's what,
how far
yeah.
can Viper carry
That's
this corpse of a
team? That's why they're there. Yeah,
and then we have Zeke on Kingen, which depending on the day,
10
like,
damage,
are
and the meta.
10 damage on Q.
Well, not only meta, but like
they're so meta reliant.
I mean, I think Zeke also literally had like he had a really good Gragas game one, and then went on to have the worst Gragas that we've seen this week, like in back to back games.
He's very volatile during regular season. It's weird.
So
if he gets on a roll, he's good, but then like day by day, it's like, is this the same person? It's really strange.
It's a decent meta for Kingen. He'll be what he's been for like the last 2 years, which is a perfectly serviceable top laner. And then the support and jungle situation is not good.
Yeah.
It's bad.
I mean, life did get POG on Blitzkrieg.
Okay.
Hey.
Yeah. Life actually did. No, I mean, the first week life has been fine.
Yeah, life has been fine. The problem is Clid, and it always has been Clid. And I don't think it's necessarily Clid's mechanics that are the problem, guys. I was having a discussion with a friend of mine today, and I was just saying, like, it's just that Clid doesn't know when to go in, or he only goes in and that, like, doesn't communicate it all that well or something like that. Like, I imagine if everyone's brain on Homolife Esports was wired the same as Clid, the team might actually just be amazing. Like, if they just knew, like, when Clid was going to be, like, a crazy person and run and everyone was there. Like, they just, no one's ever there.
My take on Clid is that, you guys remember that game he had in spring season where he was, like, 5-1 on Vi in, like, the first 9 minutes of the game?
Yeah.
He plays every game like he's 5-1 at 10 minutes, but he's usually not. And
yeah.
And so, like, he's like, I'm super ahead, we're going to make this play. And everyone's like, whoa, slow down, brother Clid.
I mean, there's moments like that, but there is also the moments that, for me, make me a lot more scared and, like, hurt a lot more.
The hesitation he has sometimes as well.
Well, it's the moment where he, like, he's playing Viego, you have your Flash and you have your ultimate, right? And he still gets caught by Ahri, like, who comes over a wall, and you have two amazing escape tools, and neither of them actually get you to safety.
Oh, that mid lane play around the dead turret. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the one where, obviously, Lost
Split... You re-hurt me. My feelings are re-hurt. Yeah.
Obviously, Lost Split, Clit had the worst Maokai play I've ever seen, where he W'd and then Q'd a Maokai out of someone. He smashed them out of a Jin W, and then they didn't get the kill.
Did you?
Another reheard moment. And then he still had a good middle of the split, so, like, maybe he can put it together. But
I didn't like it when he played Sejuani.
No. I think this team is always going to be hard capped, barring any, like, DRX esque like shenanigans where the meta completely shifts and really fits them, to be like a bottom of the pack playoff scene.
There's a reason why every single series they play is three games. It's because mid and jungle for that team is just so volatile all the time, every single game by game.
Because when they look good,
it's like, yeah, when they look good, it's like, holy crap, Zek is amazing. Where is this guy? Like, he's a top mid laner, right? And then he just totally dumps it. I don't know what happens.
Think
Clid does the same thing, right? It's just,
yeah,
it's just
so
unfair to the rest of the players.
They're so
to
emotional.
Be honest.
They're
so
emotional
hard.
And so momentum based. That, like, they can beat T1, for example, in spring when no one else can because they're feeling on.
They're high rolling.
Yeah. They're high rolling. And it's like the best parts of this team
Okay,
so what I think Hanwha thought some of the best parts of this team would be were the parts that were from DRX that were also high rolling in a meta that high rolled for them where they were able to win the world championship. And now that the low rolling or mid rolling, you know, it feels like, well, this is really frustrating. We spent all this money on these world champions. We got Viper, but the expectations were really high, and the result is very middling. And, well, it's like a heart rate monitor that's going up and down where you just don't know what Hanwha life you're going to get. It's really difficult to predict this team, which is why I think we all have them, like, straight in the middle at fifth or sixth place, because you just know they're going to punch up high sometimes and then sometimes lose to weak teams, and they're just going to end up in the middle and...
It's like the Rox Tigers that then became Homolife Esports after, you know, the original Rox Tigers left, you know, and the team remained with new players. They've been sixth place. There was, like, that one time when Chovy was on the team, you know, and we did the amazing run and they were at Worlds and it was cool and that sort of stuff. But
every other
it
time,
just, like, no matter what 10th, they do, they're mid.
With Viper and Lahence. That was the lava.
And that was to balance it out. That was to balance out the fact that they, you know, then overperformed.
Yeah, well, Viper won Worlds the next year, so, you know, that's...
Normally, it's a springboard. The Homolife Esports springboard.
It was so dumb, because, like, 2 years in a row, the World Championship was won by a team or a player that was on the 10th place of their league the year before. Because Viper was on 10th on Hanwha, then won Worlds on ADG, and then DRX did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane. So dumb.
Yep, it's just crazy how that sort of works. But it's weird how, like, the more things change, the more they stay the same. The next bit of weirdness was the fact that I had Quantum Freaks in fifth place. I think this team's gonna, like, this is my, like, my hopium. And maybe I'll use Quantum
something.
Freaks as my switch. That might be the way. And now it's the order.
I didn't know I was gonna be tilted by this today, but Sorry, Valdez. We have different opinions. We'll see how it goes. If they can
I love Valdez.
Is very upset.
Valdez is
wrong. You don't need to take it. Just so you know, you don't need to agree with me. Like, you have yours here. It's not like we're agreeing.
Play by play, fight.
Is it that we're normally pretty aligned and it bothers you that we're not this time?
Well, all of you agree that Gwangdong Freaks are going to be good.
No. Not that they're good.
I think they're making playoffs.
Top six
in my mind for that team.
I feel like six generally. There's a pretty big like between Brion last year and then Sandbox. There's generally pretty.
I feel like an objective rating of Gwangdong is like seventh, whereas I have them slightly lower and you have them at a good rating in my mind. That's all I meant.
Hmm.
Okay, I respect it,
but. Again, it's hard
we can agree to disagree.
It's week one, you know.
Usually, so none of us know anything. For me, I draw the line at playoffs for six. Like that is the line, and then good is actually like top four.
Yeah,
like, top four is where I say good, and then I go, "You're going to playoffs, but you're going to lose in the first round."
Yeah,
and then you're not going to playoffs. Yeah, that's kind of my tier list.
There's like I feel like fifth and sixth are like playoffs fodder to make us excited about the top four.
You know,
like that's what I.
It's a good format.
We
sacrifice them. We have double elimination so they can big up two different teams.
Yeah. and then we reference that with the fact that Homolife Esports beat D Plus Kia in the first round last time around.
So it's
and
possible. So,
yeah, there are definitely upsets that happen. Roll. That is true. But it doesn't matter whether you're fifth or sixth. You still play in the first round. So in the end, you know.
So next up.
Top four.
Three of us have KT in fourth.
Yeah, somebody...
And I have KT in fourth. We're going to race KT in fourth.
I have KT in fourth, yeah.
KT in fourth.
I have D plus Kia in fourth.
And KT?
In second.
Yeah.
Whoa. Wolf is like chosen violence in his top four. Like,
I think he is officially a deft ante, actually, after this rating.
And
we only have DK one spot higher.
I'm not actually a deft ante,
I'm joking.
I'll talk about D plus first, and we can kind of do both that D plus and KT. Mm. And T1 Gen.G will be like another discussion. But for me, D plus once again look a little bit one dimensional. Well, let's say two dimensional in that
Showmaker
it's either
and
Showmaker Canyon
both of those dimensions,
or it's deft early game. And then as I say this, deft had like the late game, like 15 kills every game, but that's kind of an anomaly. I don't think it happens all too often.
Zeri.
Yeah.
Zeri.
So
Zeri.
As the season progresses and changes and Zeri gets gutted and
Zeri.
And you know, when we get to 13.12, I don't think that's gonna be a thing. I do think that the playstyle of D plus, just like it was in spring, is a little bit one dimensional. If you guys remember, I put D plus first in spring because
screw you guys.
But that was like my overreaction, which is to me like what these preds are since it's based on 1 week. But I put them in first because they were so good at snowballing. Mm-hmm. And then as the meta moved away from that and people just banned Lucian away from deft, like they fell down significantly, right? And became not a weak team, but like less strong and definitely not a first place team. This season, I'm seeing similar symptoms here early, and I think 100% Gen.G and KT are stronger teams than D plus right now. I think they have overall better fundamentals. I think they have overall better understanding of the meta, way more decisive. The one thing that D plus has that I think might prove me wrong is that they have very early and smart meta reads. So right now, I'm worried about what deft will do as Zeri moves away and like what the patch is going to do this team. But I could be wrong, and they could actually have like the great Ivern take, where they're like the first team to figure out how Ivern is played, or what happens when we're going to like week six, week seven, we're making that playoffs push, and they're actually the team that mastered the meta right before playoffs. So I could be wrong, but I just have like I have to do a vote of lack of confidence because I think this team is at the moment, even though they've shown the most unique drafts, their play style though is still very much like get deft ahead, he carries, or Showmaker and Canyon rule the rift, and like that's how it goes. Whereas Kana, still somewhat of a liability. Deft on late game AD carries can be good, but I don't think he's as good as aiming right now overall. I know that's going to be a hot take. I don't think he's as good as Guma or Paze, like not even close. I think Guma and Paze are
worse. Can we phone Aux? We need to phone Aux, like the king of aiming anti.
So, yeah, because to me...
Because that's just straight up factually wrong, isn't it? Like in every single regard?
After 1 week, I don't think we can say it, but to me, my read is that...
No, but like how long have both of those players existed in the league? Like a really long time.
I'm not talking about like.
No, we're talking
Deft
about
has
right.
a lot of trophies, bro.
Yeah, we're talking about.
No, no, but like, but that okay, should man, play bro. Into like how you rate a
yeah,
player.
Yeah, I to me,
not for this because I'm talking about who's going to win the season, not who won Worlds last year.
But even in the current form, in my opinion, the top three. 80 carries are in no particular order because I think there are so many factors influencing this. By a large margin, Arguma, Pace, and Deft, and then Viper. But Viper doesn't have a team, so like he doesn't.
Yeah,
he would be in that list.
Pace sort of like Viper exists as like a ghost.
Yeah,
up there.
Yeah, he's just like, hey guys, like, I'm not here.
I
but
would
I should
be there.
Be, I should. Be, I would be. I could be. And,
I, okay,
and
so let me clarify because I feel like everyone's like, no, you're wrong, and I'm like, oh, okay.
But you just said aiming was better than Deft.
I think right now what KT does and how they play around aiming. Okay, so I should clarify that what I mean is not that aiming is a better player than Deft.
Okay, good. Okay.
But I think right now aiming in this meta and how KT plays is often given more consistent resources than Deft is given when he's playing not Lucian or Draven, for example. And as such, like sometimes Deft gets to late game and pops off on, for example, Zeri because of his opportunistic plays and some stuff that happens in the mid game, whereas KT are like, we're going to get aiming ahead. He's going to have a lead. We have a game plan around this player, even if he's not playing, for example, Draven. Like, they know how to get aiming ahead on Zeri. They know how to get aiming ahead on Ezreal, for example. So I think the way that KT plays around aiming in a meta that's so AD carry centric is great. And I think Deft has fallen off as a late game AD carry player over this year, in my opinion. I think he's a better overall player. And yes, he has a lot more historical achievements than aiming, but I don't know if that's as relevant. I think Deft is much more focused on the early game, which is something we've spent a lot of time talking about, obviously, in the spring season.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. But I also think that it's like almost for reasons that are the opposite of what you're saying. I think aiming doesn't need any resources and KT doesn't give them to him because they have BDD and Keen who win the game.
Yeah.
And so,
I agree.
Like you don't actually need to give aiming anything. He takes scraps, but he does well with scraps. Like, he gets more out of the gold, the limited gold that he gets, than a lot of other people. He's really good at playing with low resources. Very similar to, like, what Ghost was praised for and things like this.
I think there have been games where aiming has done that, like, this season, for example, on Ezreal, like, where he's
Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm agreeing with you. I think that, like, aiming is right for KT.
But I think that oppositely, though, like, part of why KT had so much success at the end of, and now we're going back in time a little bit, but the end of spring season was because they had Cuz playing for bottom side so extremely aggressively. On the red side, he was, like, invading and taking the red buff away and actually pushing and denying enemy CS, and aiming was laning aggressively with Lehens. Lehens Blitzcrank, like, stuff like this. This is, like, this is kind of my take in that I think aiming can do well with no resources, but at the same time, KT play really well around him and empower him. And I think that, and, like, that's not even, like, the main reason I put KT above, but when we're talking about aiming versus Deft, like, zooming in on this one facet of these two teams, that's the part I'm feeling very good about KT, whereas I'd say oppositely, even though BDD and Keen are amazing, I think the synergy that Showmaker and Canyon have right now is unmatched, probably, in the LCK in terms of jungle mid.
That's fair. For me, KT, the problem is twofold. I think aiming, particularly the highest level, the meta might shift away from this and then KT might benefit somewhat, but I feel like pro play is getting, and it has been for like the last, since 2020, I think how good your AD carry is has been really important. That was the last year where it was really topside focused, and I think in 2019 we had that as well, right, where it was more about, and 2018 obviously was the year of solo lanes, but in recent years AD carry has been so important. Aiming to me still feels like I would trust any of the other players to, when they are put in a position to, like, you have to do this, you have to carry this game, I will take any of them over. And I think that KT as a team in general, to me, is the most volatile. Maybe D plus matches them, but KT to me feel like the biggest gap between a good day KT and a bad day KT is, like, colossal. And I feel like on a bad day, Gen.G can still pull it together, T1 can still pull it together. D plus, I imagine, are going to do, but it is week one, right? So we don't really know as much. D plus might kind of fumble because I have KT fourth, a D plus third.
I mean, everybody has KT fourth except me, right? But I like.
I actually.
Are we talking
to
about?
I wanted to put them.
Are we going? Are we actually? I guess we're talking about KT because this is going to be more D plus focused, but now it's become more KT focused.
Yes, it's more KT. Yeah.
Yeah.
So because I have them second, I guess I have to talk the most about this and like really...
You're the one to not have the top two out of the top two.
So yeah. I also think that KT have played the map really well, and their objective team fighting is arguably the most decisive out of any team in the LCK right now. And sometimes that can be a detriment. Like we saw even in the losers finals with Aiming playing the Ezreal game where they were actually so ahead and then they just kind of into losing that game and threw it really hard by fighting aggressively at the wrong times. I think that they're super decisive. BDD has been such a consistent player for this team. And already in this first week, minus what was a weird series against Gen.G, who's, in my opinion, the strongest team in the LCK right now, they've just been so clean. And like the way that KT sets them on objectives, the way that they play as a five-man unit when they are on their best day, is really strong right now. And I think that synergy was built over like the early parts of spring, then in the later parts of summer. This team almost went to the finals. And now I'm like, okay, well, they already had the fundamentals, and I think they get even stronger as the season progresses. And I guess like that's all I say until we talk about the other parts that I have different from you guys, because I don't want to talk this entire episode, but I think KT has a ton of potential.
Yeah, for me, I wanted to rate KT higher because I feel like there's something that fits. Like, KT, in my mind, are a jigsaw puzzle that works. You know,
it does.
Like,
it really does.
You can put all the pieces together. And I think it's because of their resource management. They know who wants to take what. They don't have, like, too many chefs. It's like the right amount of chefs. And so everyone knows where their little corner of the kitchen is, and they don't, like, take away from each other's stuff, right? And it's like, BDD gets, like, a lot, Keen gets a lot, and then everybody else gets the rest, and then that kind of works out. And I think that that has been refined and it's getting better. I don't really want to talk about the Gen.G KT series because it tills me to no end how that kind of went. I've got a lot of opinions that I don't want to share.
Game one, though, I mean, game one was pretty interesting.
Yeah, game one was like that was a great performance from KT, and then the item thing happened, and then there's you know things that we can say, but that was just. KT was out of the series as soon as that item had to be sold.
Yeah.
And I think the decision that was made, by the way, I agree entirely. Like, he bought an illegal item and he should have sold it. So
we don't get a lot of intel from the series.
Yeah. And right? I wanted That's to put KT point. Higher, but I couldn't justify it based on what I sort of knew. I think that, like, DK, I think they should have definitely beaten Humalife Esports. I think that they were a better team and they just blew it. They just crumbled on that day and it wasn't good enough. I think that they have reignited the will to win, and I think that that's a team that we should probably give a little bit more credit moving into the summer season than we did in the spring season.
Yeah, for me, the reason why I put D plus over is because, and this is something that might really backfire, I feel like Showmaker is looking a lot happier. And if Showmaker's playing well, I think the team can be good enough to, like, straight up win.
Watching them giggle in the game that they barely won against DRX in a game 3, seeing them giggle after that,
yeah,
that was that made me make this prediction. Because, like, honestly, in, like, last season, if that had happened, they would have stormed off that stage and been angry even after winning. That's what I'm thinking. But, man, it's been good to be back, and I'm so glad that we're here for another season of LCK Summer, and a lot of contention in these lists as well. Not a lot of alignment. And Valdez getting, like, I was a bit frightened of Valdez.
Scary Daz?
And he's very, and like, do you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of me and Liv Sandbox last season. So one of us has to be that guy, and I've like jumped that ship completely. I'm actually down with Liv Sandbox
Look,
doing
if we
a
get
bunch
one
of winning.
Swap and like I'm totally wrong. I mean, unfortunately, if T1 is the best, like I can't swap them with KT, but if T1 is second, it's like really easy to put KT in third. And
yeah,
no, I'm feeling like very confident about the bottom part of our predictions here.
We're pretty aligned.
Yeah. I think the top part is where it gets a little muddy.
But, like, it's also, like, only one degree of separation as well in a lot of these instances, right? That's what we've been arguing about. It's not like last time there's no shenanigans with certain teams.
Except
being
with Guangdong.
Fourth place.
Because I have them at eighth, and you guys have them at sixth and fifth.
Oh, right. Yeah. No, but you're wrong. But that's fine. Okay. You know, you're we'll right.
See. Makes sense.
That's
classic.
That.
We'll see. Classic Atlas.
Sweet I think one, I was. You know? I had one or two wrong last. You last won, you're yeah. allowed to do that.
Yeah.
But you can still win by being a bit wrong. Yeah.
It's fine.
I just like to have fun with these and to have crazy takes and, but they're like all based on like how I actually feel, but I'm like, you know what, like people will be upset that I put KT second, but I'm ready to do that.
Yeah.
I'll leave everyone with that, you know.
Yeah, I think I should have been braver with where I put KT. I feel like fourth is a bit of a cop out, but I knew they were going to Worlds.
That's their
spot. So I wanted to
put
them
where they go.
That's where they belong.
That's where they
belong.
There's
a jigsaw puzzle and you put them in the shelf in the right spot.
Number four. Yeah.
No, but like, you should see my house. The organization just isn't quite there. But that will do it for us. Thank you so much for watching. Make sure that you like, subscribe, and like, and comment, and all that sort of stuff. Let us know what you think about our ridiculous takes, and
one
also
week.
About the this is of course based on all of our incredibly accurate information that we have about the remainder of the season that we've seen because we have the script. We'll leak it to you as we continue on. Make sure that you come back, watch the next episode of the Pog State. But for now, good night. Thanks for watching.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.